Hey everyone, this is Tara Campbell-Lussier with Arrow Birth and Arrow's Angle podcast, and I'm very excited for our guest today to share with us her giving birth in the COVID pandemic story. Kelsey Haywood is the owner of Haywood Made Interiors, and she lives in the Chicago, Illinois area. Kelsey, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the podcast, and I'm just so excited to connect with you and hear more about your story. And I'm just honestly so grateful that you're even being willing, having three little babies at home and balancing your own full-time job, to take the time to chat with us and share your story. So thank you.
Oh, well, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind. I mentioned you have three kids and your work, but whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Absolutely. My husband and I live in Chicago. We have three little kids. We have Reed, who's about 3 and a half. We have Remy, who just turned 18 months. And we have Sylvie, who is about to be 3 months. So we have some pretty chaotic times at our house in the pandemic. And it was chaotic before the pandemic. It just kind of got inflated a bit when everyone's under the same roof all the time. And I own and run Haywood Made Interiors, which is a full service design business in Chicago. And I started the business the same time I started having kids. And I think that's kind of like, it's kind of like the fourth baby. I totally that has kind of grown along with them.
I always say Arrow is my fifth baby. I totally understand.
Yeah. It's just kind of, they came along at the same time that this was all happening too. So it's been a wild year, and you know, 2020 is only like not even quite three quarters of the way over, but
it feels like a decade.
I really truly feel like I've aged significantly.
I know. Oh my
God. 2020.
Yes. Well, and you have three tiny babies and you're running a business. I mean, that is really hard. It's hard to, you know, be a human, let alone a mother of young children and running a business. It's all just a lot. And then add the pandemic and it's just like, where do I begin? You know,
I was actually talking to my neighbor this morning and I was like, you know, I feel like when we get to the other side of this, whenever that winds up being, we will all be so better equipped to deal with anything. Like, everything will feel like small potatoes compared to navigating what we've been doing since, you know, March. This is a really challenging time, but I think it actually, ultimately looking back, I think it's going to be really helpful for parents in particular to be able to just not sweat the small stuff and be like, you know what, it's not a pandemic, so it's okay.
Yeah, we're not.
It's just hand, foot, and mouth. It's no big deal.
Exactly. Like, we'll get through it. Yeah. Mary and I have a good friend, a midwife we've worked with forever, that put a funny post on LinkedIn that said, so she had, I think, seven children, and she cloth-diapered them.
Good for her.
They're grown now, but she cloth-diapered them, and she did homeschool with all of them. So she made...
Bless her.
Bless her, right? But she made a funny joke on LinkedIn that said, I never knew that cloth diapering and homeschool would be survival skills for the future.
It's
because
so
like, toilet
true.
Paper was out, schools were canceled.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, oh my gosh, you know?
So. She's totally rocking this. Like, she should teach us all
something. She should. I know. I thought it was so funny and so fitting and so true. You know, the funniest,
very true.
True ones. She's just like, you know, I was doing it 25 years ago. I had no idea, you know, that this would be track for the future.
So true.
Yeah. So as the title suggests, we're going to be talking about Sylvie's birth during the COVID pandemic. So I'm just curious, what made you, we were introduced by a mutual connection, and of course you and I have contacted and connected before and we totally clicked and hit it off. But what made you feel comfortable when we were connected to be able to share your story publicly?
So having had three kids, I have consistently felt like there is not enough real talk about, you know, birth and pregnancy, the whole journey. Obviously I've kind of gotten to be a little bit old hat at this point, having Sylvie have been our third, but I've always just wanted to put out the truth wherever I could, like even if it was friends who were having their first or people who were contemplating getting pregnant, like just any sort of situation where I could give and was actually solicited if they wanted my feedback, but like,
right,
you just, there's not enough real information out there. And I think it's starting to change a little bit with, there's some really awesome Instagram accounts that I follow that are like, you like scroll through your feed and it hits every single like mom like note in your heart and you're like, oh, that is 100% how I feel every day. So getting more of that out there, I think, is really important, especially in a pandemic, because people do not know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect. The best I could do was, each time I would go to see my midwives, they would just tell me what had changed. So anything I'd planned or prepped prior to that, you go into an appointment and it's completely different, even week to week. So I think just being, I'm an open book in general, but having that be what surrounds this particular really challenging and scary time for a lot of people, if there's something that I can do to help someone, I want to do it. And if there's a way for that to just, my experience to lend some sort of confidence or any sort of positive experience that
it's like finding someone that has crossed the bridge before you.
You're about
to go on before you, and it's just so comforting to know that someone else has been there and this was their experience, and you might be able to share tidbits of wisdom or, you know, just experience what happened throughout it.
Absolutely.
I'm super appreciative. I know all of our listeners are super appreciative, especially those ones that either gave birth themselves in the pandemic or are about to, you know, because it's just going to be so enlightening and informative and helpful. So, so when was your due date with sweet little Sylvie?
So her due date was 4/28.
Wow.
So yeah, April 28th was kind of like the hotbed of everything. Yeah. And it was, I kind of knew I was going to go overdue. I went overdue with the boys. So it was 4 days with Reed, 3 days with Remy. So I just had a feeling like it's likely this girl's going to hang in there for a little bit longer. And thankfully she did, because that allowed me to actually be able to have Mike with me. So there was a very small, I think, period of time where I don't think at Prentice, which is where I delivered, I actually don't think that there was a support person allowed, and he couldn't come to my appointments. He couldn't do any of those things, but it was when the actual birth and labor started, like he was actually able to be with me. There was a lot of things that constantly changed, but like, I was actually glad that she held on until May, just to give us that extra, like, kind of, just even going into a new month, I think helped.
It was
how things were set up
changing so fast, right? So
yeah
I've heard a lot about New York not having partners present at the birth itself, and I actually didn't know that Chicago was doing something similar. So just for listeners, so Mike is your partner or husband, right?
My husband. Okay. Yep.
And then you gave birth at Prentice in Chicago. Tell us a little bit, just for people listening, give me the gist on that hospital. Is it urban? Is it big? Is it small?
Yep. Prentice is huge. Prentice is kind of the, it's the big fish in terms of women's hospitals in Chicago. And it's where I deliver the boys. I've had amazing experiences there. My midwives, that's where they ultimately deliver. And I knew I'd always wanted to be at Prentice when I first started thinking about getting pregnant, and intentionally chose the practice that I did with the midwives because they delivered there. They are a solely women's hospital. They had, and again, this is all like from April and May in terms of how it was laid out, but they actually had a whole separate COVID floor. So there was a complete floor devoted to COVID patients. So anyone who was pregnant or was delivering would be on those floors, and to anyone who had symptoms, they would immediately go from like the horseshoe drive out front, and they would take them in a separate elevator and take them up to that floor with nurses and doctors that stayed on that floor and did not cross into the other floors.
Got it.
So they had a really good system in place that I felt really confident, like even just me going to the hospital. People I know were nervous about going to hospitals in general at that time because they just assumed that they were going to get exposed. And this had everything in place so that you wouldn't be exposed. And they actually had a COVID test 2 hours prior. So as soon as you came in active labor, it was, you know, get your swab right away, and then get you upstairs to your room. So the whole approach was like, don't come too soon,
right,
or
right.
too late, because if you show up too late, you might be delivering in triage. And obviously no one wants that. We don't, as a woman who's laboring, and, you know, neither do the doctors and nurses that are down there. So that was the whole structure that was in place. And as soon as I had, or whoever enters into triage, you get COVID tested. If you are negative, you get to go upstairs and you don't have to wear a mask or anything like that.
Did Mike get swabbed as well when he came in with you?
He did not. So they were not swabbing
spouses, partners,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyone. And he had to wear a mask the entire time, which, fine. Mm-hmm. But there was just like a level of separation, whereas normally they would, you know, they would not necessarily, like, our midwives would have hugged him in
right,
normal times.
Course. Right.
And stuff like that. But he was kind of like, he just needed to step away if there was a lot of nurses or someone coming in to kind of like tend to me. Mm-hmm. But the system that they had in place gave me a lot of confidence and reassurance that I wasn't going to be exposed. And truthfully, like, once I got upstairs, I felt really comfortable.
Oh,
and like, I was in my room and I was ready to go.
Awesome. Yeah. We had an interesting situation. Mary and I live in Loudoun County, which is outside of Washington, D.C., and our local hospital here had like a separate wing for forever that was called the birthing inn. And it really was kind of like you said, that horseshoe thing, and
yep,
would go in. And so you really never went in the other part of the hospital.
Right.
But coincidentally, they were building a new women's center and birthing, you know, center and inn. I don't know exactly what the name of it is in their new renovated part of the hospital. And so mm-hmm. they were able to do something really similar, which I thought, just the timing, like, what a blessing, right? So they
yeah, put, absolutely,
you know, COVID patients there, and then put, they actually opened up early, you know, the construction, I think, you know, opening date for the new part was not set until later, but they bumped it up so they could actually have a similar
situation
to what you have, which I feel like for, you know, people giving birth there, that just worked out really well. Because, you know, it's a facility thing. Sometimes you just don't even have,
exactly,
you don't have the room, like you don't have...
Right.
Or you get, you know, routed to another hospital because they just can't do, you know, they don't have the space to separate. So that's great. So before we dive into like the actual birth story stuff, I want to know what was going through your mind. So Sylvie's due date was at the end of April. So, I mean, really all this pandemic hit like, you know, early to mid March, I think like March mm-hmm. 12th, where we are, is when they basically called off schools yeah. for like ever. So like in March and April, what was going through your mind? You also have two young boys at home. You know, as we stated, you work full time, Mike works, I know.
So yeah.
There's a lot going on. The news is going crazy. Like,
yeah.
What's, you know, it was obviously a really crazy time for everybody, but like as a pregnant person, knowing that you're going to give
yeah.
birth, like walk me through March and April for you and you and Mike.
So I had, and this is what I guess I've done with Remy's birth too, is I had like a whole plan, which was, mm-hmm. you know, my parents are 2.5 hours away in Indiana. Mike's parents are 50 minutes away in south of the city. And the whole thing that kind of shifted all of this was, typically, you know, my parents would kind of come up to the up to our house, like be with the kids, whatever. Like, we had this whole thing kind of orchestrated because it was like, if this happens, then this happens. If mm-hmm. you know, Maria, our au pair, if she's, you know, if she's out with friends and I go into labor and I have to leave to the hospital, where do the kids go, or who comes? That whole song and dance was, in a normal time, was actually way more complex mm-hmm. than what it would have been in a pandemic. So
right.
I had this whole thing, you know, like a whole document. It's a lot of like what if statements, and then these are the things that would happen. And when it just each week after each like appointment I kept having, it was like, well, we can't do that now. So it's like, you know, no doula now. There's, mm-hmm. you know, there's no visitors now. So each week it kind of like things just kept getting shaved off of the list
mm-hmm.
Of things that were going to happen in terms of like the process that would happen if I went into active labor. And it, truly made it very simple because I was so hung up on the fact that, okay, my mom can't be in the delivery room now the way that she had been for the other two. My doula can't be there now. Like, what does that look like? How do we get, you know, labor support? How do I feel like that where I had it in person with the boys? How do I feel that like virtually?
Mm-hmm.
So it just kept getting whittled down to at the point where I was like, okay, I know I get to have Mike and I know that no one could come into our house. Mm-hmm. So the only true solution was that Maria would be, she would just watch the boys. Mm-hmm. So she was going to be the one taking care of them day and night the whole time you're in the hospital.
And you had been socially isolating with Maria because she lives with you.
Right.
You're okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So she did everything that we did. And we had not, we had not set foot in anybody else's houses. We had like all the things, like we were 100% isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Which it just made it very apparent that we can't have anyone coming in here for fear that, like, God forbid, it exposed our kids to something or Maria to something and vice versa. Like,
mm-hmm.
not that we would have probably had anything in our house at that time, but like, you just didn't know. And it was so touch and go with all the information out there. So it truly simplified the whole plan. And once I could get to the place where I accepted that, it was fine.
I feel like getting to that place was probably,
yes,
like an emotional roller coaster, you know, and I don't want to put words in your
mouth, absolutely,
but just kind of being like, okay, this is just how it has to be. These are the rules now.
Exactly.
So I kind of have to get on board with the rules, but there's that journey there, right? That we all go through and stuff.
Yep.
Like, okay, well, how am I going to get to the place where I'm okay with these new, I don't know, rules or limitations, right? But it sounds like,
absolutely,
I have to say I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that it made it simpler for you because there was rules in place.
Yes, because you didn't have a choice. Like, mm-hmm. there was no choice. It was the height of everything. People didn't really know, even as much as we do now. It was a lot of speculation. The thing that truly, like, this is a really random thing, but I made a routine. I think we shut down on the 13th of March, and every day at 2:30, our governor, Governor J.B. Pritzker, he would do these press conferences. Mm-hmm. And I realized I wasn't going to get a lot of really true, like, straight shooting information at a national level. So I just got straight local with the state of Illinois. And I started making decisions based on what he was saying, because he's all fact-based, science-based, like he's not messing around.
Mm-hmm.
And I would find I'm a seeker of information. So I would find comfort in him providing, even if it was like horribly terrible information,
mm-hmm.
he was still getting it out there. And like, we kind of felt like we had the things that we needed to make decisions and stuff like that. Like, do we go to the grocery? Do we wait, mm-hmm. 2 weeks until Amazon can deliver our groceries? Like,
mm-hmm.
things that were like very kind of basic needs. I would listen at 2:30, and I like made a ritual out of it, to like lay down on the couch and just watch his press conference on my phone. And while it was terrifying in those early weeks, when things kind of started to stabilize a little bit, it felt like I could see the progress. So I think that ultimately helped me a lot, but it was pretty daunting information. It was a lot of scary stuff, frankly.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot to process. It's a lot to think,
yeah,
through. But that's great. It sounds like you had a trusted resource that on a local level that really was able,
yes,
to bring some relief, you know, to all of the crazy overwhelm that's going on. So that's
100%.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that was kind of what that was for me. Yeah.
Great. Awesome. I'm curious about, like, you mentioned like the doula and your birth plans, mm-hmm. like at the actual hospital, you mentioned what it was like, you know, checking in and, you know, getting scanned and, you know, the COVID-free patients went this way and the, you know, COVID,
yeah,
patients went another, but down like a little bit more granular, and you might be able to get into this more once you start telling the story, but like for that birth plan you're talking about, I commonly call them like optimal birth goals, right? Like in the best,
yeah,
case scenario, this is what I want. Like, was there anything different, like in the labor and delivery room that the midwives were like, and now we can't offer this anymore. Like, we can't do
nitrous.
We can't do, you know, we can't delay the cord clamping. Like, those kind of, like, more birth goal kind of things.
So I really, really, really wanted to do this without an epidural, and they had nitrous available. Mm-hmm. Like, they had not had that for the boys, and they had that at the beginning of 2020. I was like, yes, like, I really want to try this, because there is, I had a really long labor with Reed, 24 hours. With Remy, it was like 10. And I knew, like, I'm more about speed. And if, like, I can get through something, no matter the intensity, I can get through it better or with, like, some sort of tools in my toolkit. But when they took the nitrous away because of the respiratory aspect of, like, mm-hmm. putting the mask over your face and that now being, like, a contaminated thing, they just completely stopped doing and offering nitrous. So I couldn't have that. That was the one thing where I was like, shoot,
Bummer, right.
I really wanted to try that. Because I knew this was going to be our last baby. but that, and I guess when Megan, my doula, who's been there for the other two boys, when that was no longer an option to have her in the room, I was really bummed. Same with my mom. But like, again, like, I understood all this stuff and it made sense because it seemed like if I could just have Mike there, it was going to be fine. Like, mm-hmm. we could get through it, we could do it. But like, yes, I had well-laid plans always with, mm-hmm. with every birth, mm-hmm. and like, they almost always get blown up. And I've gotten to the point where I've accepted that. And truly what I ended up saying, because my mental health played a huge portion of just the general challenge of this pregnancy for me. The boys, I felt really pretty good. Like, yes, I was sick a little bit and I could deal with it, but for some reason in this pregnancy, I like had a bout of like depression. I've tended more towards anxiety, never towards depression. So that hit me around the holidays and it was really, really challenging. And I didn't even know what it was until I was almost kind of out of it. So that was tough. And like, I knew my mental state was really, fragile. Mm-hmm. And all I ended up kind of saying to myself was, I just need to get through this and I need to have a baby at the end. Like, I just need to get this baby into the world. It's going to be fine. Like, I knew my body was exhausted. My body was shot, like, pain like I've never experienced, in pain just day to day. Never mind like the mental aspect. And like, when you have three kids in 3 years, your brain kind of forgets that you haven't been pregnant for all of those 3 years, mm-hmm. And how challenging that is. But you don't really, like, when you have two kids at home and you're running a business, you don't really have a chance to like just sit with your thoughts. Like, mm-hmm. there is no time to process. So even before the pandemic, I was like, I knew my mental state was fragile. And if I didn't pay attention to that, it was going to be a lot worse. So I ended up just like, my basic goal was like, you know what, yes, I don't want to have an epidural, but if it's the difference between me suffering and being angry and holding on to something that I don't need to hold on to in labor, this, my plan is just to have this baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to have this baby and I don't need to hang it over my head that I didn't, you know, tough it out and have a baby without an epidural. Like, that's not the goal here. The goal is just to have a baby.
Absolutely.
So I had to bite it off in really digestible chunks or I was going to lose it. And truly, like, that's kind of like, the pandemic in a lot of ways took a lot of the pressure off of me, because the pressure I was putting on myself, mm-hmm. I guess I should say. But that pressure I've put on myself all of the births that I've had. I'm like, I don't want to do an epidural. I don't know why I had that in my head, but I have. Mm-hmm. And this time I was just like, you know what? And she had been breached. Like, there had been a million things with this pregnancy that like it was always working against me a little bit. And I thought for sure, like, I was just gonna have a C-section, and I had to accept that. And then of course, you know, at 37, she turned transverse, and then mm-hmm. she, like, at 38, she was head down. I was like, so I had like this whole series of expectations for myself and then what ultimately ended up happening, and I had to let go.
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up, the true thing that actually helped me get through both the mental and physical, I guess it is just like pressure that I continuously put on myself, but I ended up going to a really awesome, she does PT, but she also does cranial sacral therapies, and she ended up doing some really interesting stuff where I was able to physically connect my emotional to my physical body and let go of a lot of stuff. So I know not a lot of people have access to that sort of therapy, and it was something, this was like my last resort because I did talk therapy, acupuncture, massage, PT, everything. I have done it all. And the thing that ultimately got me to a place, and this was the very last thing that I did prior to everything locked down. Like Thursday, I went to see her, and that Saturday was when everything locked down. And she was able to get the baby into a position, and thank God, because that was the difference between me having a C-section and not, or like getting to a place where I could accept the fact that if she didn't stay in that position that I'd have a C-section. So it kind of helped me, it helped me release a lot. And I would probably just tell people, like, in a pandemic you have enough pressure of decision making and like things that are conflicting internally, but like just make sure you have the baby and like you can do this. Don't put additional pressures on yourself, because it's impossible to carry that.
It's such a heavy weight,
impossible,
right? It's so heavy. And then adding the pandemic. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. I mean,
yeah,
that was a lot of stuff, right? It was a lot of emotional stuff. I'm so glad that you put your mental health a priority, because I think as moms, A, we're not talking about that as often as we should be. And B,
right,
like we do all the things and then we're just all overwhelmed and the to-do list never, you know, and it just leads to so much heaviness and weight and mental health issues. And I'm just so glad that you found a resource that sounds like really was impactful in the best way for you, with the cranial therapist, and also that she got your baby, or helped to get your baby.
She did some magic.
Yeah, she did awesome. Did her magic stuff. So thank you for sharing all that, and I really appreciate that. And I'm always a proponent of moms and parents and really everyone talking about mental health much more than we do. And I think the tide is turning. I feel it. And I tend to be an optimist, but I feel like people are talking about things anymore. People are talking about things that they're going through much more, and creating safe spaces and finding the tribes that they need to, whether they're online or in person, safe circles of people that you can trust and talk to. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I am so excited to hear a little bit about Sylvie's birth. So I'm wondering when you feel like the birth story began and kind of what was going on then, and just, I'm going to listen and you just tell us whatever you're comfortable sharing about once you began labor or you think that story began.
Sure. So I think what's interesting is, again, something that people don't talk a lot about is like the weeks leading up to active labor, how I have what my midwife calls an aggravated uterus, which is that it's very active always. So I typically like start having relatively strong Braxton Hicks around like 20 weeks. With Sylvie, it was like 17. And so for, you know, all of these weeks and months, my uterus is always contracting, always. Like it can be regular, it can be like every 5 minutes for like an hour. So the rules of like, you know, call if you have a strong contraction of like of however many times, and like that doesn't apply to me because that's just every day. And I get to a point where I ignore it to the best of my ability. But as the weeks to your due date draw closer, I'm always like, it's kind of like the start-stop thing where I like reach out to my doula and I'm like, hey, this is happening. She's like, okay, check in like 2 hours, you know, eat something, lay down, take a bath, whatever. So I know this song and dance relatively well. And my water has never broken unless I was in active labor. With the boys, it was like Reed, it was 12 hours into my active labor. Remy, it was probably like 5 hours. And the story with Sylvie basically starts 8 p.m. on a Friday. I'm standing in my kitchen talking to, this is on the first, I guess. Yeah, Friday the first. And I'm talking to Berea, and I don't even know what we were talking about. It was something simple. And I was just like, I think my water just broke. And she kind of looked at me and I was like, yep, it definitely broke. So I went to the bathroom. And by the way, I've always said I really wanted to have the experience of my water breaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like where I was just like, that was the thing that started it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really happy that that actually happened, because that has not been the case for me previously.
Cool.
But yeah, and she was like, she kind of got freaked out, because I think she just expected the baby's going to like fly out of my body.
Right, because that's what happens in the movies. It's like,
exactly.
Water breaks, like hail attack,
right.
And we have to go.
Oh my God, get her in the cab.
Yeah, it's actually much more common for it to break than with the boys later in labor or even in transition, you know. But
right.
It obviously does happen at the beginning sometimes, so that's cool.
Exactly.
To get that. Yeah.
I was kind of excited to have that experience, and it was also kind of nice to know, like, okay, the baby has to come sometime in the next, you know, 18-ish hours.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had long labor and I've had a labor that went relatively quickly, but like the interesting part about all of this is my water broke and nothing happened. My uterus was quiet for the first time in what, 3-4 months.
Mm.
Nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And no contractions, not even like a Braxton Hicks. Like I just kept gushing water.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that that was a thing. I didn't know that that was something your body could do, that it just kept producing amniotic fluid, and that was no big whoop if your water broke and the active labor didn't start. So I waited a while. I texted my doula, and she's like, yep, you know, let's just like hunker down, let me know if anything changes, eat something, drink some water, try to rest. So that was what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then at about midnight, nothing was happening. And I just called the midwives to say, hey, like, not sure what I'm supposed to be doing, but it's already been 3 hours and nothing's happening. And they basically said, come at like the 10-hour mark versus the 12-hour mark of your water breaking so that we can do the COVID test. You can get swabbed. And that way, if you're not in active labor, you can hang out and triage, and then we'll wait for your test to clear and then you'll come up. So that's what we ultimately ended up doing. And I had Berea here with the boys, and we woke up.
Mm-hmm.
Mike woke up.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty much awake most of the night, just going to the bathroom and trying to make sure nothing else was happening.
And seeing more and more water, and you have to
exactly just being like, how could there be so much?
Yeah.
Like wearing a pad and just being like, this is sopping wet. Like,
yep.
this there can't be more,
like,
but there
is
definitely more.
I know.
Right.
And then you see Mike like dozing peacefully, and you're like,
yes.
You're just like dealing with like a mommy diaper and like not exactly knowing what's
exactly. So at like 5:45 or 5:15 is when I woke up and got out of bed, and I was like, all right, I'm just gonna get the rest of my stuff together. I'll wake Mike up. So I woke him up like right before 6, and we snuck out of the house because the boys had been waking up around like 6:15 at that time, and I was like, we gotta get out of here because they can't. We can't explain this away. Like, we just need to be out of here when they wake up. So I had an egg sandwich and I got in the car, and it was a beautiful morning, which in Chicago, you don't get a lot of really beautiful sunrises like that. So
aww.
We drove into the city. Sorry, you don't get to see a lot of sunrises because you're like in the city, you just don't get to see the horizon. But when we were driving
that
in,
made
you could
me
see the sunrise over the city.
That's so sweet.
It was really awesome. It was really nice. So that, like, we felt like that was like a good omen.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there, and of course the nurses are amazing. My contractions still were not, like, they'd hooked me up, you know, they're basically like you're like sputtering. So I didn't really, there was no urgency to get me upstairs, and they were basically like, hey, like, you're, at this point, I was like 12 or 13 hours after my water had broken. And they're like, they're probably going to want to speed things up. And I'm always of the impression in the mind that, like, I want as little intervention as possible. But this was one of those things where I knew I wasn't GBS positive. Mm-hmm. So that was good. But I just knew the longer this went, the more exhausted I would be, the harder it was going to be to, like, fight the fact that people might want to give me a C-section versus just letting me have the baby vaginally. So I opted to do Pitocin. So they got me upstairs, hooked me up. It was very strange to walk into the delivery room because that's not been my experience previously. And I got to take it in. Like mostly every time I have been in a delivery room, my eyes have been closed because I've been breathing and like just focused on contractions. And this time, you know, there's the warmer and like all the things that you didn't see, and like the cute little pink hat. Like you don't see that stuff when you're in active labor because you're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. So it was weird to have that experience and like walk in, know I'm going to have a baby and know it's going to probably happen relatively soon, but not have any of the just debilitating contractions. So,
and when you said it was weird for you to walk in, I just want to clarify for listeners. So usually, does that mean that you...
walked in.
Right.
Normally I was in a wheelchair getting wheeled into like...
Because after triage, they would wheel you down to the labor delivery room because you're in very active labor or
Having
to go down there. So this time you were able to just walk right in and take it.
Right.
That's so cool. They're all so different. I love that.
It was very different. So they had checked me at triage and I think I was like 3.5, not even 4. And that's what I had been, the doctor's appointment at 40 weeks was 3 or 3.5. And, I was like, crap, this is no bueno because I know how long it can take to dilate, but I also know that the third baby things can really go quickly. And my doula always tells me, don't attach your expectations to the number, which is why she usually says, like, just don't get checked, or she advocates for not getting checked. But I am an information seeker, so I like to know what's happening so that I can kind of gauge my own expectations. But when they got me hooked up to everything, they wanted to wait to check me because nothing was really happening. And then they just kept bumping it up. I think it was like every... I don't know if it's 15 minutes or half an hour, they just kept increasing the Pitocin. And there's a picture of me laying, my bike must have taken this picture. We have, it's called the Facebook portal, and it actually is this amazing kind of like iPad type thing, but it has its own stand. So it was like on the tray table next to me, and the camera follows you if you're moving. Obviously I wasn't moving at that time because I was laying on the bed, but like it pans the room so you can see what's going on. So that's how Megan, my doula, and Nikki, one of my really good friends who's in the process of getting certified to be a doula, they were both on the portal. So before we called to them, I called my parents and I was just like, hey, you know, here I am, blah, blah, blah. Like nothing's going on. And I basically, now looking back, it's like, everything was all fun and games until the Pitocin really kicked in. Cause I was like, la, 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 and like laughing and talking. And then it really started to go. And, I could feel things really progressing. And I was like, I had to pee a lot, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, they basically had to help me get to the bathroom. I would like kind of walk back and have a contraction. And at that point I said, we need to call Megan and Nikki. I want to get Megan on the portal. And like, as soon as they came on, like things really started to ramp up and Megan's like, okay, this looks like, you know, you're really starting to go here. Like, let's see what's going on. Like, let's get you checked in a little bit. So got checked and I think I was like 4.5 or something. And I don't know if I can swear on this, but I literally said, that's freaking bullshit. And
of course you can. Yes.
And I was like, that's it. Like, I can't keep doing this. Like, and the whole pregnancy, and I guess it ties back to this entire, like, the mental health connection, I think, was I, for whatever reason, had a really hard time just letting go. And I think it relates back to, like, letting go that this is my last baby. Like, this is the last time I'm doing this. The pandemic, like doing this so quickly in so many years with like such a unexpected pregnancy, like all of these things were it seemed like a way for me to like hold on to this, mm-hmm. and to what necessarily I can't identify exactly what, but the whole time, and I feel like my body was like trying to hold on to something, and I don't know if it's trying to hold on to the baby or if it was trying to hold on to like this journey, I have no idea, but like there was something I was still holding on to. And when they said you're 4.5, 5, I was, and I thought that that was absolute baloney. I could
or
tell
bullshit.
That I was right that I was holding on to, I was holding on, and mm-hmm. I turned to the portal and I looked at Megan. I was like, I think I literally said, I don't want to puss out, but I don't think I can do this right now. I just want to have this baby, and I don't think I can let go until I get the epidural. So I was having insane contractions. Obviously, they have to call anesthesiologists, blah, blah, blah. Everyone has to come up. They have to get prepped. La, la, la. Sign your life away. Here you go. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. I know all these things. I just did this. Mm-hmm. Like, sign my name.
I was here last year. I get it.
Right. I wasn't here that long ago. I'll sign again.
Yep.
And they did the epidural, and it was not, actually the birth notes from my doula, it wasn't even 15 minutes later. The trouble with an epidural, for whatever reason for me, has been with each pregnancy and each delivery, is I can still feel a pretty good amount of pain and pressure with the contractions. Like I could still feel when I was contracting. I was never one of those people that was like, la, 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 I don't feel anything. I could still feel it and would have to breathe through contractions, but it would take a good portion of the intensity away. Mm-hmm. So they did the epidural. I was basically screaming because I could tell like things were really happening and transitioning. And then I laid down and they were like, okay, we'll give you a few minutes to rest. I was like, no, no, no. I feel pressure. I like pressure in my butt. And she's like, you have to poop. I was like, no, like a baby's head's about to come out. And she checked me and she's like, you're 9.5 and you're 10. And it was like within not even 20 minutes of having the epidural, she was out.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't very much in terms of pushing, which I'm grateful for, but like, it truly was. And the midwife was like, I think this is the, like when I was getting the epidural or kind of mulling it over, she's like, I think this is the right thing. I know you're going to go really fast. As soon as this epidural hits you, you're going to be right there. So she was suited up. She was ready to go. Mm-hmm. And she was right. So, it was just a really, and then, you know, like not even 2 hours later after I just talked to my mom, I called her back and I was like, here she is.
Oh.
So she was like, you had her? I was like, yeah. I was like, it went really fast. So, yeah, it was a very different experience. And my doula said from the beginning, she's like, you know, your first is typically, it's long, it's hard. You really don't know how you ever want to do it again. Your second goes faster. It's usually faster, side note. And she's like, and the third, for whatever reason, it's just different.
Yeah, we kind of call it like a wild card. We're like, we don't know what we're really going to get usually. And again, this is all.
And that's exactly right. Terms,
but yeah, yeah.
It was exactly right. Cause I couldn't have planned this. This was not in any of the hypotheticals that I had cooked up in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be like, you know, getting wheeled in or trying to walk into triage in active labor with like, you know, baby falling out of my body, which could happen to a lot of third time moms. But, that just wasn't Sylvie's journey. And she's truly like, she's just a sweet baby. And I had this whole thing cooked up in my brain that she was like working against me the whole time. And she was like doing all these, like she wasn't doing anything. My body had challenges processing hormones. My body had, you know, difficulty just adjusting to the physical nature of being pregnant so much in so little of time. And she had nothing to do with it. Like mm-hmm. she came out, she's great. She's sweet. She's smiling. She giggles. She's a very good baby. But she's tough. And mm-hmm. like, and I know that she's going to be great. Like mm-hmm. she's just a tough cookie and I'm proud of that. But like, I had this whole thing cooked up that it was her fault. It's not her fault. She's not responsible for any of this. And it is hard when you're in the throes of battling yourself and your body and your mm-hmm. brain, to remember that this baby is completely innocent and has absolutely nothing to do with it. So,
and they all have such their own journey, right? Cause I feel like, I mean, yeah. I have several kids. You kind of think, Like, and I would tell clients this all the time, because as you said, like, typically first baby is long and hard, right? And they're thinking, I'm about to go through that again with baby number two.
Exactly.
Because they're only drawing from their personal experience of what they physically and emotionally and you know, went through. But it's just like, the more you have babies and see birth in general, you just, I mean, they're all just so different and unique, and every little baby has their own little journey of how they need to get here, you know, safely, and you know, what they need to do. So I want to touch on, you mentioned your midwife. So did she, she, like, did you know her well, or was she with?
Okay. So she, this practice is great. I've met all the midwives over the, you know, over the last 4 years, and my primary midwife delivered Reed, and then the same midwife delivered Remy and Selby. So she had just seen me, you know, like barely a year, a little over a year apart. And I was actually in almost the same room, which was weird. So it's very weird, because, like, you have babies that close together, and you just feel like it's all one big long pregnancy, but there's two kids that came out of it. But she's awesome. She's a straight shooter. And I very much appreciate that in all aspects of life, especially anything like medical. So, I was really, really excited when I realized she was the one that was on call. It's like, great, we were just here.
But and I also
all over again.
She, you know, she obviously is a midwife and has tons of experience from that. But she knew you, and they're like, you don't get that all the time, and for various reasons that we don't have time to get into. But like. That's such a touching part of the story to me, that she knew you, she looked at you when, you know, it sounds like you were basically going through transition, and
she did what she wasn't supposed to do, or wasn't allowed to do, was she helped me when I was getting my epidural. And that's usually what they do, is, like, you know, they let you rest your head and you kind of wrap your arms around them. But she wasn't supposed to do that. I knew she wasn't, and she did it anyways. And she kind of, she went forehead to forehead with me. And then at the end, she's like, I know I'm not supposed to do this either, but I got to give you a hug. So she gave me a hug at the end. But yeah, she, typically there's a lot more hands-on stuff that she would have done, but she couldn't do it. And I think just instinctually she did it without thinking about it or realizing that there was going to be any sort of, like, ramifications for her, even though they knew I was negative. So I think that was a really great thing to have her, and to have it be someone that knew us and obviously knew my body and that sort of thing too. But yeah, it's a great thing to have the consistency there when you can get it.
And then, and as you know, and like being in that birth room, and like, I get the pandemic and we all socially distance and we wear our masks and we do all the things, but there is so much emotion and very often magic in that moment, that she probably put her forehead to you because she knew that's exactly what you needed. And the emotion and the moment kind of took over. And then she's probably like, oh, whoops, I forgot, you know, pandemic.
Right.
Just, there's so much in that room and in that moment that just kind of overtakes you. And that's what you would normally do, because, you know, we're not always in a pandemic. And so that's really special. That's really sweet. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That is what a beautiful journey. I love that you know, you got to experience so many different things that you didn't with the boys. That seemed like they were really special for you, which is great. You know, the sunrise and the water breaking, and all that kind of stuff, and the same midwife. If you don't mind, tell me a little bit about, so Sylvie is out. Was there anything different because of the pandemic during that immediate postpartum time? Talk to us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
So I think what ultimately, typically Mike would cut the cord, and I actually want to say maybe he did cut the cord and he was not, like, that was not part of protocol. I'd have to actually double check with him that he did it, but her cord was actually very short, so I couldn't even get her to my, like, to my chest. She was, like, laying on my belly, and they did allow us to wait for the cord to stop pulsing, which is what we were always asked to do. But I'm almost positive they said, I think Mike said, am I allowed to do it? And they said, just go ahead and do it. Which again, like, they didn't have to do. And I know it's kind of like a little ceremonial, because it's like, that's our last time that he's going to be able to do that. But in terms of actual, like, as soon as she was born, if anything changed, not really. I don't, nothing that was noticeable to me. Like, it all felt very, very similar. The only thing that maybe would have been different is that Amy would have, like, legitimately tried to, like, put my breast in the baby's mouth to, like, get the baby to nurse.
And who's Amy? Is that your midwife?
I'm sorry, Amy, the midwife. Okay. Yes. And she didn't do that this time. I think she just, like, stood next to me and kind of, like, was, like, just standing there. Mm-hmm. But obviously it's kind of something I'm pretty used to at this point. Mm-hmm. In terms of just, like, getting, hopefully, that baby to latch the first time. But honestly, like, there was not as much of a difference. And I know Mike held the baby once everyone kind of left. Or, like, everything was wrapping up before I got to go to the postpartum floor. But
how about in truly, the postpartum I don't think there was floor? Much. Was it
that?
Was it, were you allowed to leave earlier? Was it, did they treat, you know, was it, you know, yes. How did that go?
There were some changes there. So they had, and they had prepped us for this at my 40-week appointment, but just saying, like, hey, you know, you can go ahead and head home right after at 24 hours or whatever time you kind of feel like you want to get discharged. And I guess I would say, first of all, it was kind of refreshing to be out of the house. One, mm-hmm. like, not that it's a cakewalk and not that it's
why?
Like,
because
you've
been cooped
vacation,
up in the house for months.
Right. But it was nice to be somewhere else. Uh-huh. It was nice to not have anything to do other than to, like, go to the bathroom and take care of a baby. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to have people be around you. Like, this is, like, a very weird kind of twisted thing that you wouldn't really anticipate being refreshing, but, like, people could touch you. People could get close to you and have a conversation. They had masks on. Mm-hmm. Mike had a mask on, but I didn't have to because I was negative. So that, it was honestly refreshing. And I didn't find any challenges other, and actually the other part that was refreshing is that there's a lot less people coming in because they didn't want people to come in. Mm-hmm. So you didn't, obviously you didn't have guests, you didn't have visitors, you didn't have, it was probably half of the amount of nurse and, like, doctor checks that come in. There was, it was actually very nice because when you were asleep, you could stay asleep.
Mm-hmm. You mean the trash person, like, didn't come in to empty the trash at 4 o'clock.
They would do it right.
After,
they would do it
right
exactly.
After you got, you know,
exactly.
The baby settled.
They would do that maybe once a day versus, like, twice a day. Where, like, I remember, like, they would come in and clean the floor and they would do all this stuff. And it's like, just leave me here. It was way more peaceful. Mm-hmm. It was a much calmer experience because you weren't being constantly interrupted. Mm-hmm. And again, nothing I could have anticipated that being, like, a positive, but it really was. And the only difference is that, like, honestly, I don't even know that there was anything that was, like, that dramatically different. Except for it was, like, kind of harder to get a pediatrician because they only wanted to come by once. Mm-hmm. So I, honestly, that end of it, I hope they stick to that because it's so much more, it's way better in terms of recovery to not be interrupted. And that I found this time way more than the other two times.
Yeah, that is nice. That, I mean, I gave birth in the hospital once and that's just so vivid in my mind. They just came in constantly. And I know they're all just doing their jobs. It's nothing personal against anybody else. It's just like, you're just, you know, especially as a brand new mom, you're like, I'm figuring out all the things.
Right,
you know, holding
right.
baby and trying to nurse and, you know, caring for my bleeding vagina or the stitches,
yes,
you know, in
yes.
my, you know, stitches in my stomach or whatever it is. And
right,
like, it's
right.
just, yeah, you feel, I felt like a bit on display, you know, because they're just, like, kept coming
you
in.
Are. You totally are.
Bombarded. So that's nice. That's so, sorry, I just kicked a little, kicked something, sorry. That's so refreshing to hear, you know, because you're kind of thinking, oh, pandemic birth, pandemic postpartum.
It's going to be horrible.
Like, give it to me, all the horrible things. But it's so nice to, you know, there's always those silver linings. So it's so great to hear that, you know, throughout this pandemic birth story, there is these beautiful silver linings also that people can look forward to if they're going to be giving birth soon. So that's really, really cool.
Definitely.
So you're home now. Sylvie, mm-hmm. you said Sylvie's 3 months old, right?
She'll be 3 months on the 2nd.
Oh my goodness. So she's May 2nd, nice little spring baby.
Yes. Aww. She is.
So, and it's like, how do you feel at home now? You've got three little ones. It sounds like Maria is still there.
Yep, she is. It's a crowded house. It's crowded. And I think in Chicago we've had, and I know across the country, we've had some intensely hot days, which make it really challenging to get outside. The kids, like, great, you know, you can soak them in the sprinkler, you can do whatever to cool them off, but like with Sylvie, you just don't really want to have a baby out in 100 mm-hmm. degree heat. Mm-hmm. So we've been staying closer to home, which just kind of perpetuates the kind of stir craziness. But the thing that we did that I think was good for everyone was my parents, I think I mentioned they live in Indiana, still in my hometown, still in the house I grew up in. And we had them quarantined for 14 days. And my brother, my youngest brother who lives up here, and his girlfriend also quarantined for 14 days. And then we rented a house near one of the lakes in Warsaw, my hometown. And we were there for the whole week. So my parents got to see, hug, hold the kids, things that they haven't had since March, or they hadn't seen my dad since Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it was good for everyone. Like, there's a lot of wide open space. The boys could just run. Remy started walking, which is a huge thing for someone who's had, you know, two babies, essentially one who's like 23 pounds and just a stocky kid that would not walk by himself. He would walk holding your finger all day, but like, he was not confident yet in letting go. And of course we left Remy with my mom and my brother, and he started walking like while we were there. So that was like it was a really awesome thing to come out of that week, but it was nice to step away. And I would normally be so overwhelmed packing up three kids, because I was overwhelmed just packing for two or one. Mm-hmm. But again, all of this circumstance around all this is like, I can handle anything. Like, just like, give me 2 hours, I'll figure this out. And I did. Mm-hmm. And it was relaxing enough for Mike and I to actually feel like we got a bit of a break. And that kind of gave us a little bit of like a recharge to feel like, okay, we can like finish out the summer. And yes, the winter is probably going to be really tough here, but it just gave us a little bit of a boost. So that was one of the better things that we've done for ourselves, even if it was, you know, insane to pack up six people and put them in one vehicle for a 2.5-3-hour drive.
I do that very frequently. And it's like a day. It's like, I need a day to like, you know, organize all the things and wash all the lunch, pack all the people.
Yes. Like,
yeah. Remember, you know, the life vest for this one and the, you know, there's a lot to that. So, but I'm so glad that you got some family time, that your family got to meet Sylvie and see the boys in person. And,
it was really nice.
That's so nice. And you guys could take a deep breath and, you know, boost the morale and then come back.
Totally.
And, good. Okay. So I'm wondering if you have anything else you'd like to add or share. Like, just imagine someone else is listening to this that is a pregnant person right now, and they're giving birth, you know, in an urban environment like you did. Is there anything else you would share with them, or any little tidbit of advice you have?
I guess this is like a more holistic kind of like whole pregnancy journey type thing. And I don't even actually know if we talked about this, but I was pregnant before Reed, and we lost the baby at 13 weeks. Today is actually her due date. Like, this was her due date, 7/27, of 2016. But I say this only just to tell people, like, if someone had told me, and you know, when I was trying to get pregnant the first time, this was going to be my journey, not a chance I would have believed it. Sorry, I'm probably gonna get emotional.
Please, it's okay.
There's no way I could have written this. It's crazy that this is where I am with three little kids in this house. And the most chaotic days, the hardest days, I still really try to hold on to the idea, like, I wanted this. And we got this. Like, I did not think in losing a baby that any of this would have been possible. I also realized, like, without her, these kids wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. And that's a really it's a hard thing to like revisit, because you truly just, you don't get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You can try, you can, time makes it a little bit easier to digest, but you have like, you have these years, they're crazy when you're having these kids and then they're here, and it's still crazy, but like, it's just a different flavor of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to like, if there's ever anyone who's been struggling or doesn't know if they can get pregnant or doesn't know how they'll get pregnant or whatever the case may be, or if they're just looking to grow their family and they know that there's options, but you just don't know how your family is going to evolve, and you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. We can't.
It's a hard thing.
We can't
script it. It's so hard. Mm-hmm. A type A planner type person, you want to know everything. You want to make sure you're doing the right thing. You want to have all the information. You want to make the most informed decision, when truly this is one of those very few things in life that you have zero control over. And if there's a baby that's meant to be a part of your family, it's going to find its way there. Mm-hmm. No matter what. And it doesn't even mean that they need to be living in your house to mm-hmm. still make an impact. Like, in my heart, I have 4 babies. In my house, I have 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, that's the way it is. But like, I never could have imagined, and all the worrying, all the like anxiety and all the stuff I carried with myself for so long, because I didn't know how I would get this. I didn't know how, after losing a baby, I would still be able to get pregnant 3 more times. But I did, and I'm very fortunate. And I know that there's a lot of people who struggle with loss and difficulties getting pregnant. But like, this could be your story. This could be your journey. And you don't really know that until you're at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of what, some of the things that I was holding on to emotionally in this pregnancy still haven't had a chance to like fully come out, because we're just surviving every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just been surviving for a long time. Like, just having, you know, as many pregnancies as I have had, my body has been constantly, you know, either in some sort of state of growing or recovery and postpartum and breastfeeding and weaning and all these things. I still don't think I've fully come to grips with like this being the end of that. Like, this is the end of having kids for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably haven't processed that entirely, because I can't, because there's 1,000 other things to deal with and think about right now. But at some point, this is going to hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know when that day is yet. And I guess my advice is just to people, anyone, couples, anyone who's trying to find a way to have a baby or to get a baby, you can't anticipate the things that life is going to either give to you or have happen, both positive and negative. So you just have to be along for the ride. Like, it's so hard to say, but especially at a time like this, when there's so much uncertainty, the only thing you can have control over is like what you can accept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard thing to accept that you don't know what's going to happen, but it makes it a much easier ride if you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kelsey. I think there was
that's so emotional.
No, please. Oh my gosh. We are emotional beings. Like, this is definitely the space where we want to be, as authentic as we are. You know, this is the conversations we all need to be having. And I am so sorry for your loss. And I really appreciate you sharing that as well.
Yeah.
But I think there's so much wisdom in what you said right there at the end of just, it really is just this ride you go on. And if you want to plan out your family and you tend to, you know, be a type A, as you said, like,
right,
you just can't. And like, that internal struggle is what causes the most, I don't want to say grief, because that's not the right word, but the most strife, right? It's like, well, I actually can't like fix this in any other way. I have to just, like you said, kind of enjoy it. I call it like the roller coaster of of emotions, and it's just in life, right? It's like all just one big roller coaster. But I'll just add too, like you mentioned, like, you know, it's at an end for you, and I've shared with you that I have you know, four kids, and they're like I was in a similar position to you 5 years ago. Mine are about 5 years older, and so I would just say, like, it may be an end of, you know, you having physical babies, but it's also a beginning, because, like, now I'm getting emotional. Like, there's so much for you to look forward to, because it's so crazy right now. Like, people ask me about when my, you know, I had four under five, and I'm like, I literally don't remember that time. I'm sure I was at that whatever thing you say I was there. Right. But my brain, I was like so sleep deprived. I don't know. But it is so hard when they are so little, and the sleep deprivation, and as you mentioned, so hard on our bodies, like to grow and breastfeed and all this stuff. And it's just hard, and it's a blur, but there's also, like, I feel like, and I'm going to knock on wood here, like I'm getting into a little bit of like a sweet spot where, like, I don't buy diapers anymore, you know, like I'm not, and I'm getting to, like, enjoy the like friendships and personalities of my kids as, like, you know, getting older kids. They're almost preteens now, my twins. And it's like, it's an end in some way, but, like, nothing really ever ends. It's like just this, like, continuing, you know, evolving of the journey of it. So you and Mike have so much to look forward to, you know, and of course processing all of that is important too, you know, and worthy to mention, because we can't carry that emotional, you know, the heavy emotional stuff forever. We have to process it and work through it. And you will. It's just so crazy right now that it's just, you know, just try to find, like, little mindful moments of, like, 5 minutes, you know, like I'm thinking of when you sat on your couch when you were still pregnant at 2:30, you know, where you can just, like, take those deep breaths. Cause it's just, it really is such a blur. It's such a blur, but it's a beautiful, crazy life. It really is. So I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you being so raw and honest. And I think that everyone else will appreciate that as well, because as we've said, like, we've got to be raw and honest and real with each other, because this shit is no joke.
It will get you. Like,
it will get you.
It'll get you.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough. And I just hope that you and I can keep in touch. I want to, you know Absolutely. How you guys are doing. And just please, you know, I'm always here if you ever need a thing. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
Okay, honey. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.